الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا ومولانا أبي القاسم المصطفى محمد اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد وعلى أهل بيت الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين لا سيما بقية الله في الأراضين روحي وأرواح العالمين له الفداء رب اشرح لي صدري ويسر لي أمري واحلل عقدة من لساني يفقه قولي. So dear brothers and sisters, I thought what would be a good idea would be to discuss a little bit about the actual topic that I've chosen for these nights. The topic is called Revisiting Core Principles of an Islamic Lifestyle. So the question is this: why choose that as a topic? Why spend several nights out of this holy month talking about this concept? The reality is this, brothers and sisters, that as Muslims, we use and have adopted a lot of Islamic terminology. I'm talking about us as a nation. We use Islamic terminology, especially us as followers of the Ahlul Bayt. We believe in things like wilaya of Ahlul Bayt. We consider ourselves people who have love of Ahlul Bayt. We have other concepts like iman, faith, tawakkul, reliance on Allah, ibadah, right? These are terms that we're using and we believe in. And we consider ourselves to be people who have these traits. The challenge is this. There's two challenges. One of them is this. If you look in the verses of the Quran, if you look at the ahadith of Ahlul Bayt, you'll see that those people who have these traits, who possess these characteristics, there's certain promises of God that they've been given. If someone is really a believer, I'll just mention some of the promises, is one of the challenges. There's certain promises that believers have been given. And if we see, you and I, that I think I have the traits, we as a nation, we're supposed to have these traits. This is in the Quran. This is part of our language, part of our discourse. But then I don't see the results. Then I've got to look and see what's wrong. Something's wrong. I have to go back to those core principles and make sure that I have the proper definition. I'll give you an example. One of the things that we've been told as believers that we have is a concept which is oft repeated in the Quran of al-ulu, the idea that Islam is superior, not equal, superior to everyone else. We have verses of the Quran that tell us, antumul a'laun in kuntum mu'mineen. You are superior if you are believers. But then when we look at the state of Muslims, we don't see sometimes that Islam is superior. The reality, Islam is superior. Islam is superior. If we're believers, we're supposed to be on top. But if you look at the state of the Muslim nation, sometimes you see Muslim nations are dominated. Muslim nations are oppressed. They're, instead of being superior, they're the ones who are behind. Another promise that we have in the Quran is al-ghalaba. We've been promised in the Quran that we would be victorious. Why is it that sometimes we see we're the ones being pushed back? We're the ones that being defeated. Instead of Islam being on the rise, Islam is... So what we want to do is we say that, you've heard this before, people say that insanity is when you keep trying the same thing and expecting different results. Right? Keep trying the same thing, expecting different results. You and I, when we look and we see that I'm not seeing, God's word is true, but I'm not seeing those results that are there for Islam, I have to go back to the drawing board and make sure that I actually possess those characteristics and those traits. This is one reason for discussing these concepts. We don't want to be like that story I may have told you, brothers and sisters. Once they said it was a guy who went to an emergency room. In the emergency room, he comes into the emergency room and he has two burned ears. So the staff in the emergency room, they said, what happened? He said, I was ironing my clothes and somebody called and I thought the iron was the phone and I burned my ear. They said, well, why'd you burn the other ear? He said, they called back. We don't want to be like that. As believers, we're supposed to be, we're advancing, we're moving forward. What's wrong with the definition? What's wrong with the understandings? God has told the truth. For us as believers, we have to make sure that we have that proper understanding. There's another challenge, though. The other challenge is this, and it's been with believers for a long time. If others know that we don't have a deep understanding of the religion, that our understanding of these Islamic concepts, these lawful, lofty Islamic concepts, is weak or superficial, they can take advantage of our religious sentiments. Sometimes, as believers, we can actually be part of the problem. Sometimes, the more religious and devoted we are, without understanding, the worse the problem gets. The believer is over there very sure, very certain, moving in the wrong direction. Hadith, we have hadith from this. Al-Aam, this is from the sixth Imam, Imam Sadiq, salamullahi alayhi. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. He says, Al-Aamilu ala ghayri basira. The person who's practicing, but they don't have basira, they don't have that deep understanding of the religion. They're only superficial in their understanding, but they're amil, they're practicing, doing amal. He says, كَالصَّائِرْ عَلَىٰ غَيْرِ الطَّرِيقِ. They're like the person who's traveling on the wrong direction. I'm supposed to be moving in this direction. I'm going in the wrong direction. He says, the hadith continues, the faster the person goes, the further they get from the destination. So religious sentiments, without that deep ground, well-ground understanding, the more religious sometimes, more danger. So what happens is, there are others, and I'm going to, inshallah, give some modern examples, who are using our religious sentiments as believers, as a nation of believers, against us in such a way that it delays the return of the Imam. Using deen against deen. Remember the Khawarij, what they did? Put the Quran on the spears, and now we're going to fight the Quran, which is Natiq. So, what we want to do is make sure that we have the proper definition of these terms. Make sure that we're true believers. We have understood these concepts properly. That's why we're going to revisit these core principles, the things that make up an Islamic lifestyle. By the way, there are many areas that this covers. What is true spirituality or irfan from an Islamic perspective? We have to understand that. What should our relationships be like with our children, right? There's a lot of areas in Islam that we as believers, we're supposed to be ibadah, worship. This is the month of worship. We want to make sure that we have identified these things properly and we have that deep understanding so that we can go over and serve the cause. So what we're going to do, inshallah, if Allah gives tawfiq, brothers and sisters, is this. We want to follow in the footsteps of the Ahlul Bayt, alayhim as-salam. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. Our imams, for that 250-year period where they were present, they had two major responsibilities vis-a-vis the ummah. Two major responsibilities. One of the responsibilities that they had was to re-educate the masses. People were Muslims. Let's say in the time of Imam Sajjad, salamu alayhi. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ala. The masses in the ummah, they're Muslims, they're praying, they're fasting, they're going to Hajj, paying zakat, making, right? Why is it that they weren't victorious? Why is it they weren't ready for the government of the Ahlul Bayt? One job of the Ahlul Bayt was to go over and re-educate the masses on these core principles. The ahkam had to be retaught. The ideology had to be retaught. The jurisprudence, the philosophy of Islam, all of these things, the Ahlul Bayt, alayhim as-salam, they had to teach. There was another duty that they had too. The other duty that they had was to get the ummah ready to accept the governance of the Ahlul Bayt. It wasn't only a matter of information. Yes, one part of it is information, making sure that I even have understood Islam and the principles. But what else? Is my heart ready to accept in practice? So that was also another duty that the Ahlul Bayt had, that they did, and we want to make sure that we have these things. I want to give you an example from history, and then after that go to some of our current topics. For instance, there's a verse of Quran that the enemies of Islam, remember the political apparatus at that time, they were going over and using Islam against the believers. For instance, there's a very verse that probably all of us have heard, Surah Nisa, verse number 59. Allah says, يَا أَيُّهَا الَّذِينَ آمَنُوا أَطِيعُوا اللَّهَ وَأَطِيعُوا الرَّسُولَ وَأُولُو الْأَمْرِ مِنْكُمْ. Obey Allah, obey the messenger, and those vested in authority amongst you. What they'd done was take a verse like this and get it so that the believers said, whoever becomes the Amir, we have to obey. Yesterday we were fighting this person. He was against us. He was the wrong guy. We were obeying that Amir. Now we're obeying the current Amir. And it's wajib, ulul amri minkum. God has said, no matter how terrible, how fasiq the Amir is, he's telling you things against Islam. This hadith that we have in the books of the brothers of the Ahlul Sunnah, right? Where they talk about obeying the Amir, even if he's doing dhulm. Right? So a concept like this, how could somebody do that? What they did was they had ulama. They had scholars. Those people were supposed to be supporting the religion, teaching people what the religion is. They're going over, and these individuals would go over and explain a concept like that, something that anybody, how could it be? I'll give you, these are historical examples. They said, under the command of Yazid, right? Under the command of Yazid, we went towards Mecca. We were fighting this, at this stage, they were fighting, and they had surrounded those people in Mecca, right? Remember, at one stage, the Islamic kingdom had become divided, and you had some members of the Ahlul Zubayr were in Mecca. So the soldiers were saying this. They said, we were stoning, they're using catapults. We were using catapults on the Kaaba and praying to the Kaaba at the same time. Obey the Ulul Amr, whatever it takes, religion, God. So now, in the past we'd have these concepts, people wouldn't understand these concepts, but now you and I need to think about something else. What's a modern application of this? How does this affect us right now? Questions, doubts, misunderstandings that are there that are stopping the return of the Imam of the time. Things that you and I need to make sure that obviously we're clear on. Not only that, that we spend time talking with others so they're clear on it. We don't want any believer to be knowing or unknowingly supporting the wrong cause with religious conviction. So I'll mention one of them. One of them that usually gets thrown around. But before that, some hadith. First, please send the salawat. So let me go back and say what the topic was again. Revisiting those core principles of Islam, the core principles of an Islamic lifestyle, and now the emphasis from the Ahlul Bayt on this. What we're trying to do, brothers and sisters, is get one of the core traits of the Shia. One of the really important traits that we as Shia are supposed to have, we find it mentioned in the hadith. This first hadith is from Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam. Listen to the words of the Prophet. Uffin li kulli muslimin. Woe be on every Muslim. La yaj'al fi kulli jumu'atin yawman yatafaqahu fihi amra dinih wa yas'alu an dinih. So woe be on every believer, every Muslim, who doesn't spend at least one day per week getting a deep understanding of the religion. Woe be on that person. If somebody has a superficial understanding, is that acceptable? Not for the Shia of Amir al-Mu'mineen. They have to all have that deep understanding of the religion, yatafaqquh, that deep understanding of the religion. Especially our youth. Especially our youth. Our youth who are going to be the people who are carrying the banner after us, they also have to make sure that they have that deep understanding of the religion. Their understanding isn't superficial. I hope you guys don't take this hadith the wrong way. It's from the sixth imam. First, please send a salawat. Salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. Meaning, for us, we're just trying to establish the importance of a topic like this, okay? What did the imam say? He says, لَوْ وَجَدْتُ شَابًا مِنْ شُبَّانَ الشِّيَعَ. If I found one shab, one youth, out of the youth of the Shia, لَا يَتَفَقَّ. And he didn't have that deep understanding of the deen. He says, لَذَرَبْتُهُ بِسَيْفِ. لَذَرَبْتُهُ بِسَيْفِ. I would have taken, you know, the sword is in a sheath. I would have taken the sheath of a sword and hit that person over there. Why aren't you studying? Why don't you have that deep understanding? So this, brothers and sisters, it's not an option for us. a few good, yeah, if we have time. No, that deep understanding of the deen is supposed to be in the masses of the Shia, so we can take this forward, especially our youth. The hadith was that if I find a youth who's not like this. So what happens is, you and I know that we're supposed to be intellectually convinced when it comes to Islam itself. Intellectually convinced when it comes to Islam itself. It can't be that as a believer, I still have doubts about the core tenets of the deen, or I followed it because of my forefathers. I remember hearing a story once. They said once, it was an old Indian chief. And his people came to the old Indian chief, and they told him, the winter is on his way. Do you think the winter's going to be cold? The chief didn't really know, but he said, yeah, the winter will be cold. Go out and gather wood. But being a good chief and responsible individual, he called up the National Weather Service. And he said, is this winter going to be cold? They said, yeah, it's going to be cold. He came back to the people. He said, go gather wood. Get as much wood as you can. Then 2 weeks later, he went back again to the National Weather Service, just checking. He said, is it going to be cold? They said, it's going to be very cold. He came back to the people and he started telling them, gather up as much wood as every scrap of wood you can find, you go over and you gather that. The next week he went back and he called the National Weather Service. He said, what's the winter looking like? They said, the winter is going to be extremely cold. Don't you see the Indians are gathering wood like crazy? Right? So we kept the blind following the blind. The believer intellectually convinced, and more than that deep understanding of these principles and concepts. Now I'm going to go over and I'm going to mention, with your permission, some of the doubts that are out there. That we're hearing on a global, these are things that are stopping people from taking the proper stance. They're slowing down the cause. Okay, but let's say I'll mention one today, because I don't want people to maybe hear the doubts and then they say, oh, now I don't believe in anything, and then leave. So that's, inshallah, that won't happen. So, for instance, maybe you've heard this one. Sometimes when it comes to the proper stance of the Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam towards the political apparatus of the time. What is the correct stance? What was the stance of the Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam when it came to the political apparatus, the ruler of the time? What you'll hear is this. Sometimes people say this. With you guys, everything for you is Hussein and Yazid. Everything for you is Karbala. Always, everybody's face. And they'll throw a religious example. They say, but if you look at the life of Imam Hassan alayhi salam, you see that he wasn't always up in everybody's face, always shouting, always screaming. See, you guys, you're always Husayni. What about Imam Hassan? That's another approach. It's another approach. So now, for us, and I want to answer this, is it really the case that this is a personality type. One person's diplomatic and one person's loud and scream. By the way, people are using these things. This is a reason why people aren't taking the appropriate political stances right now. When it comes to the stance of the Ahlul Bayt, and by the way, they're hurting the cause, getting others to also not take the right stance. So, let's go step by step. What was the stance of the Ahlul Bayt, alayhim as-salam, towards the political apparatus of the time? If you look in our ahadith, brothers and sisters, you'll see that we have so many hadith that use these words, Buniya al-Islam ala khamsa, or ala khams. Islam was built on five things. Islam was built on five things. So many of the ahadith that talk about this, and then the ahadith mention, and nothing has been emphasized as much as the wilayah of the Ahlul Bayt. One dimension, brothers and sisters, because there's other dimensions, one dimension of the wilayah of the Ahlul Bayt is the stance of the Ahlul Bayt towards the current political apparatus. That's one part of their wilayah. So what was the stance of the Ahlul Bayt? If you look at the ahadith of the Ahlul Bayt, this is what they say. This is from the sixth imam. He says, نَحْنُ أَصْلُ الْخَيْرِ. We, Ahlul Bayt, are the root of all goodness. وَفُرُوءُهُ طَاعَةُ اللَّهِ. The branches of goodness are the other acts of the obedience. But the most important, the core issue, when it comes to goodness, all khair is the walaya of the Ahlul Bayt. What else? It says, وَعَدُوُّنَا أَصْلُ الشَّرِ. Our enemy, the guardian who is not divine, is the root of all wickedness. وَفُرُوعُ مَعْسِيَةُ اللَّهِ. All the other things that you see, all the other sins that you see, alcohol, everything, zina, riba, anything else that you see, these things are the branches. The real core issue is the wilaya, which is not divine. So the Ahlul Bayt were like that. And you heard those hadith from the Ahlul Bayt where they would say things like, عَلَى الْإِسْلَامَ السَّلَامِ. Islam itself is finished. إِذْ قَدْ بُلِيَتِ الْأُمَّةِ بِرَاءٍ مِثْلِ يَزِيدٍ. Islam itself is finished if there's a leader like Yazid, not that Yazid. So what happens is this. Was that stance the stance of one imam or all imams? All imams. For instance, maybe you've heard this story from Imam Al-Kadhim, alayhi salam. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. The imam was offered by the tyrant of his time, Harun al-Rashid. And you know, he was Sayyid. He was from the Abbasids. He's from Bani Hashim. Harun al-Rashid. He said that I would like to give Fadak back to you. So the imam said that, no, you keep Fadak. He said, no, I want to give it back to you. Imam said, no, it's okay. I want to give Fadak back to you actually by the right of your grandfather. Tell me what Fadak is. He said, the only way I'll take Fadak back from you is if I take Fadak with the original borders. He said, tell me, the original borders, Bismillah. He said, the original borders? Yes. He said, one of the borders is the end of the Arabian Peninsula, Yemen. Harun's face started to change. He said, the other border is Africa, Tunis. The other border, Armenia. The other border, Samarkand. By the time he had finished, Harun's face had been changing so much. He said, nothing's left for us. You just come and you take the throne. And that is when he became determined to martyr the imam. So it's an implacable stance when it comes to the political apparatus of the time. But that's not it, though. This is not enough for us. What about if the political apparatus was just? What about it was democratic? What about it was friendly, tolerant? Then what? What is the stance? This one, if you remember, our imam, the fifth imam, he was sitting in the masjid in Medina. And a man named Umar bin Abdul Aziz came into the masjid. When he came into the masjid, remember who Umar bin Abdul Aziz is. Because the imam predicts in this particular hadith, he says, this young man is going to come to rule. Who was this individual? And then I'll tell you the answer. Umar bin Abdul Aziz only ruled for a short time. He was known as being the noble person from Bani Umayyah. He stopped the Latin of Amirul Mu'mineen. He returned Fadak to Ahlul Bayt. He allowed the ahadith of the Ahlul Bayt to be transmitted. He had a warm relationship with Imam Baqir. When he came in the masjid, and the Imam made that prediction, he said he's going to rule. And then he said this. He says, when he dies, ثُمَّ يَمُوتُ, after this he's going to die, فَيَبْكِي عَلَيْهِ أَهْلُ الْأَرْضِ. The people in the earth, the inhabitants of the earth, they're going to all be crying over this individual. وَتَلْعَنُهُ أَهْلُ السَّمَاءِ. But the angels will be cursing him. The imam continued. He says, why? He explains. He says that he, لِأَنَّهُ جَلَسَ مَجْلِسًا. He went and he took a position. لَا حَقَّ لَهُ فِيهِ. That he didn't have any right for. So you remember that story? It's from the sixth imam. They said once our imam, there was some individuals and they were very impressed with somebody. Very, very impressed. They came over to the imam. They said, this man, Allama, this man. So the imam, he said, who is this individual? They pointed him out. The imam started watching the individual and he followed him. The guy went. He waited till the crowd was around. He was trying to separate himself from the crowd. I don't want to be around these individuals. And he took off and he went in a direction. And the imam walked behind him. When the imam walked behind him, the man went into a store and he waited and he saw that there was nobody looking in the store. There was some fruits in the store. And he went and he took two fruits and he put it under his cloak. And he left. After that, he went over to another store. Over there, they were selling bread. He waited. Nobody was looking. He took two pieces of bread and he put it under his cloak and he left. Then the imam continued to follow him. He went to a house, a broken down house. There were fuqara over there. And he took out the fruit and he started giving it. And he took out the bread and he started giving it to the fuqara, to the poor. After that, the imam said, stopped him. He said, what are you doing? He said, first of all, tell me who you are. And the imam explained his lineage. I'm Ja'far, the son of Muhammad. I go back to the Prophet. He says, you're a son of the Prophet and you don't know the Quran? He said, how do I not know the Quran? He said, I'll ask you a question. And he quoted the verse of Quran. He says, someone who commits a sin, how many sins do they get? Someone who does a good deed, how many good deeds do they get? مَنْ جَاءَ بِالْحَسَنَةِ فَلَوْ أَشْرُ أَمْثَالِهَا. Whoever does a good deed gets 10 of those rewards written for him. But whoever does a sin, only one sin is written for him. What did I do? I just did 40 good deeds and I got 4 sins. Do the math! The imam stopped him right there. He says, no, Allah only accepts from the muttaqeen. You can't do justice with stolen property. Even if you have a government which is doing justice, like the government of Umar bin Abdul Aziz, people were making dua, they were crying for him, asking Allah to forgive him. He did so much justice, he distributed the Baytul Mal properly. The stance of the Ahlul Bayt towards the political apparatus was implacable. You can't do justice with a stolen position. There's no mercy in this. As a follower of the Ahlul Bayt, it's also important for me to make sure that I'm not misunderstanding these things. So now, back to that example that they give us. And there's other examples that they give us. They tell us that Imam Hassan was a pacifist. Imam Hassan was diplomatic. Everything's not Karbala. Why are you always quoting those examples? Always everything is Yazid. What about the example of Imam Hassan? He went over a clear enemy like Muawiyah. He went and he made peace with him. He made a peace treaty with him. You also can go with a clear enemy and make a peace treaty with them. You're actually following the imam. Alhamdulillah. As opposed to you and I were saying that we're implacable when it comes to these things. So then what's our stance? This one's important for us. The Ahlul Bayt. And we need to make sure this is the way we introduce them to people. The Ahlul Bayt, each and every one of them were heroes and warriors. They were all fighting to do what Imam Mahdi will do. All of them. For this reason, we have hadith which says, مَا مِنَّا إِلَّا مَقْتُولٌ أَوْ مَسْمُومٌ. None of us. There were no members of Ahlul Bayt. In this hadith from Imam Hassan, he says, except that we were either poisoned or maqtul, we died with the sword. Why is it that somebody would go over and kill noble, wonderful individuals like this? Is it because they're related to the Prophet? Because they were generous? Because they were ma'soom? Because they claimed to have the knowledge of awwal wal akhar? No. It's because of this dimension. They were implacable to the political apparatus at the time. They were working to restore haq to the Ahlul Bayt in order that God's representative rule the earth. For this reason, they were opposed. For this reason, they were fought. So what happened then? When you look at the words of Ahlul Bayt, see how they describe the peace treaty with Muawiyah. This hadith is from Imam Muhammad al-Baqir. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad. He says this, Wallah, the Imam swears by God, Wallah, لَلَّذِي صَنَعَهُ الْحَسَنُ بْنُ عَلِيٍّ عَلَيْهِمَ السَّلَامُ كَانَ خَيْرًا لِهَذِهِ الْأُمَّةِ مِمَّا طَلَعَتْ عَلَيْهِ الشَّمْسِ. What Imam Hassan did was better for this nation than that which the sun has ever shone on. What he did on that day was better than any, that was one of the most important events in Islamic history altogether. That's what the imam did. It was a heroic act. It wasn't that he came to terms with the enemy, that he submitted and that he didn't feel it was necessary to take a stance. No, actually the imam, when you look at what's there in the books of history, because remember, I mentioned the first time I mentioned the shubha, the question is that Imam Hussein was one way, nastajiru billah, he was belligerent, and Imam Hassan was peaceful or docile. Are they really like the two personalities? Remember this. Imam Hassan is the Imam of Imam Hussein. He supported the treaty. Imam Hussein did. Hazrat Abbas did. It's not that the Imam wasn't warlike or that it was just a personality type. That was just Imam. So what happens is Shahada under all circumstances is not wise. Sometimes you have to play the long game in order to still accomplish the same goal. It doesn't mean the goal of the Imam is any different. As the hadith says, they're all one nur. All of them, they're one nur. They're all doing the exact same thing. The strategy change. Otherwise, the implacable stance towards the Tawhut, that's absolutely the same. If you remember, Imam Hassan wanted to go to war. He tried to go to war. He arranged an army. He tried to fight against the tyrant. The masses of the Muslims didn't understand how terrible it is to have non-divine rulership. The masses. The Imam saw this. He knew how dangerous it was. He knew the danger that faced them. He explained. The people, they responded. They told the Imam. They told the Imam, so he spoke. He said, look, I'm ready to go over and fight. I'm ready to go. I'm with you if you're with me. فَنَادَاهُ الْقَوْمُ The people started shouting. You know how we have Salatul Jummah and the people are giving takbir. Over there, نَادَاهُ الْقَوْمُ The people started shouting, الْبَقِي الْبَقِي The people, we want to stay alive. The masses. So was it that the Imam wasn't warlike? No. But when your generals are going to the side of Bani Umayyah, your generals. The masses don't support you. The Imam was attacked. If you remember in the books of history, our Imam was attacked by his own followers. Right? He was in his own area attacked with an axe. They're going to go over and they will arrest the Imam and turn him over to Muawiyah. At this stage, the Imam has a different strategy for saving Islam. Muawiyah from the other side is going over and giving a white piece of paper that he signed underneath. Here, you go over and you sign this peace treaty. War is costly. I don't have any supporters. The people, the masses don't want any kind of war. Do I go over and just those few handful of followers go over and just hand them so they become cannon fodder? Why would any wise person do that? The Imam did something else. He went over and he... So the stance against Muawiyah was very clear. The Imam's not backing down. How can I continue to fight? Why was it the Imam was martyred? He decided to play the long game and plan for the death of Muawiyah. He was going to play the long game for the death of Muawiyah. At that time was when they were going to make their move. The move that Imam Hussein did carry out. And again, the believers failed Imam Hussein. So what happened? If you remember, he went over and he made that peace treaty. When he made the peace treaty, they started working. Oh, there was one other problem that the Imam had that inshallah our Imam won't face. So one problem is the masses have this slave mentality. They're okay with being dominated. They don't understand what the dangers of non-divine leadership are. There's another problem too, though. What's the other problem? Our Imam didn't have followers like Malik, enough of them, like Ammar, people who could go over and serve as khawas for the Imam, to go over amongst the masses of the people and make things clear for them, explain to them where the truth is, where falsehood is, what's falsehood trying to do. Not only that you have one Imam who understands everything, what about the rest of us? Our duty to go over in smaller circles, making sure people understand the dangers that are out there. So our Imam had the masses who were like that asleep. In addition to that, he also lacked that proper number of core followers, so he did something else. What he did was, if you remember, Islam started off as a resistance movement and an ideology. When we were in Mecca, we were a movement. The Prophet went over and he gathered those core followers. He gathered the core followers. And when he gathered those core followers, he helped build them, train them, work on them to the extent that we became ready to go and establish an Islamic state. We moved to Medina. What happened when we moved to Medina? Once we went to Medina, over in Medina, we established an Islamic state. We went from being a movement up into being an Islamic state, having a government, implementing the laws of Islam. Again, we faced certain difficulties, but that was there in the time of Imam Ali, the government, the Islamic government practicing all the principles of Islam. After those difficulties that were there in between, that was reestablished, and then now you find this situation. What did Imam Hassan do?
He guided us back into being a resistance movement. Still undiluted, still same principles, still fighting for the same cause, but now again we became an ideological movement preparing for the long game. That's what he did when he made the treaty. Inshallah, may Allah make all of us, by the right of Imam Hassan, people who truly understand the deen and are able to work for the cause as we should. Please send us salawat.